This is the new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the number one doctor-recommended weight loss program. Lose more at weightwatchers.com.
At 6 months, participants in a clinical trial of Weight Watchers program lost an average of 12 pounds.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers.
I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/new.
Medications require eligibility and prescription. Patients on 15 milligrams of tirzepatide had an average of 21% weight loss in a 72-week clinical trial when paired with diet and exercise. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month MedPlus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.
All medications require eligibility and prescription. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month MedPlus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
This is The Big Breakdown. A long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Well, here we go. We're going to talk about Nancy Guthrie again, get an update, discuss where things are at or where they're not at. Crime scene was released too early. The thermal imaging plane sat aground. The lead sergeant had never worked a homicide. Experienced detectives had already been sidelined. The doorbell footage was declared unrecoverable until the FBI recovered it. And the sheriff leading all this has a documented grudge against the very agency that was supposed to help him. Every one of those failures, they have a name attached to him. To it, the question isn't just what went wrong, it's why, and whether this case can survive what has been done to it. Now that we are, seven, eight? What? How many weeks in are we now, guys? I don't even, do we know?
Infinity and beyond.
I think eight? No, I don't know. I think we're on day 70-something.
I think it's at least 8 or 9 weeks, right?
My God. I mean, it's the beginning of the year, and here we are. We're almost into May. Yeah. Jennifer Coffin Daffer, retired FBI special agent, is our guest. And of course, as always with me, Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the counterintelligence behavioral analysis program. I want to start here. I want to start with a tweet that we started with this morning that we all had joined in on. Jen, you had posted on the internets about the thoughts from Nanos directly that Nanos knew the motive, or that law enforcement knew the motive going in. Another wild claim that, of course, has come out of the mouth of Nanos over time. And I think my response was something of, I don't believe anything this man says that he knew anything. I guess I want to start there, Jen, with Nanos, because it's one of many claims that he's made. Do you buy it? Do you think they know the motive? Or do you think this is just more lip service and just more things that came out of his mouth from the man who's not used to people holding him accountable for his words?
It's a good question. You know, I've always said at the backbone of these cases, at least from my vantage, I always try to post the facts as disseminated by law enforcement as the crux of our fact basis, right?
Yeah.
In other words, sources, we never even know who they are. At least we know who he is. We also know he's in the know, right? He has access. He's running the investigation alongside the FBI. In this particular quote that that I took from one of his press conferences. He specifically says, we've always had the motive. It was what they thought from the beginning. And so then you look at that and you say, well, what corroborates that? And what corroborated that were a couple of things. One was a statement by Savannah Guthrie. Number two was the fact that on the second, that was when the first message was sent, email was sent to the locals. We just didn't know about it because they didn't say anything. Uh-huh. And then finally, you know, it went to TMZ on the third, so we knew about it. I don't think the ransom request was worth for anything. In other words, it was more to punish this family because by then she was already dead, so it wasn't really for money. But I think from how I saw him deliver that, he believes they know and that it was a ransom.
So what is the motive? And according to, is it just cruelty? Cruelty to Savannah Guthrie? Is that what he believes it is? Or that he believes he's known from day one?
No, I think he thinks from day one it was a ransom.
Okay.
And then the cruelty came after she died, which, come on, we all knew you can't kidnap an 84-year-old with health issues, which they all have, and expect them to live.
Yeah.
That's why I still, this is just, there's so little actual data and facts, and it's just all over. So we go, I mean, how many times are you going to keep saying, we keep going down the road of, all right, we're doing it. The intent is to make money. And they completely screwed that up this way, sideways, upside down. And even with, and Jen, you've been posting this too. I thought this was a great idea. So if this is actually real, if they actually think this is real, and one of these nut jobs is actually the real ransomer, and I'm highly skeptical of that to begin with too, then why not give a little something to find her body, to recover the body? Because if they wanted to make money, you have to be able to provide that. Even if you can't give sign of life at this point, if the intent was money, but now we're not getting that, which is weird. And then now if the secondary intent is cruelty, okay, but there's a lot of other better ways to do that as well, more effective ways. There's no other leakage. That's why this whole thing is just bifurcated, strange to me. And kind of following up with that, I'm curious, and you posted this as well, and I wholeheartedly agree. I'm curious, BAU's not weighed in as far as we know. Now, they might have consulted, and that's why I'm curious what you're hearing. Generally, if BAU consults on things, they're not going to publicize it. The sheriff's department, someone else is going to publicize that they weighed in on it. But in cases where they, and we saw this on Tony and also Jen when we covered the yogurt shop murders many years ago, and BAU came in on that and they refused to actually do a consultation really because they didn't have enough data. They didn't have enough evidence. And so Jen, I'm curious if BAU is either, are they weighing in and the sheriff's not saying it? Did they come in, say, we don't have enough to say anything? Or they came in, weighed it, and said, you know, it's just not fitting any of these patterns. That it's kind of where I'm at on this. Is that's why I'm like, I'm open to everything, because every time you go down a road, boof. Every time you this road, boof. And so where do you think it is with BAU?
I 100% think they weighed in. And I think that they were able to weigh in based on the ransom notes that they had on day two and day three and day five. And also on him, looking at him, just like with Luigi, that we could tell so much in terms of economically what that guy was about. You could tell so much about his age, you know, using the hostels, all those little data points, as you put it, that really could give a profile of him. I think we have the same profile contributors here, particularly with that ransom note. Robin, I used the BAU three times. All three times, they were absolutely spot on.
Oh, yeah. That's why I keep going to their research as well, 100%. Because, again, they're using research and background and data from all these things. But there's also a difference, and I'm curious whether they, you know, inside, I mean, you know, this is more for the audience than anything else. So inside a CIRG, Critical Incidents Response Group, you have the BAUs, and last I was in, there was four different BAUs, 1, 2, 3, and 4, each with a different specialty. And then you also have the crisis negotiators, which are actually separate, but it's still inside CIRG. So I was thinking that the crisis negotiators are the ones that are actually working with, you know, and these guys like Chris Voss and Never Split the Difference. Those are the ones actually working on the statement analysis and working with the ransom note or the BAUs. How does that, because I actually never worked with them directly in my cases because our team did different things. How do you think that worked, the dynamic worked?
I think they would both have been consulted, as you said, and you just bring up a great point. You have your hostage negotiators, but to me, hostage negotiators in large part are get their information from other agents. In other words, from the case agents, they're the ones, though, that know how to communicate and how to make the best interaction with the hostage taker. Right. So it's that skill combined with the behavioral analysis unit's knowledge of behavior that is combined, in my opinion, that would make the right nexus for the what would have been communicated by the family. But I think BAU is all over this sucker.
Yeah, I would hope so. And I'll tell you, and that's why even from the get-go, I thought the communication that Nancy and the family, well, I mean, Savannah and the family was doing was really spot on. They covered so many different angles that would appeal to so many different people, I thought. And you could see their origin of what they wanted to say, then tweaked and fine-tuned by these master crafters. But yeah, anyway.
So if we're looking back here, and let's play along with Nanos for a moment, and he knows the motive, and the motive was ransom. Obviously, that didn't happen, even though they said they'd pay, dead or alive. And it's not to criticize, you know, Savannah or her family or anything doing anything wrong or right. I mean, just what if they knew this motive, and this was the motive all along, it was to get ransom, and then they offered it, and these notes originally were authentic. If what went wrong? What could have been done differently that may have produced a different outcome? Or did they do everything right, and just the other side, the people who have Nancy, just chose not to participate at some point?
Yeah, good question.
I think a couple of things. First of all, I can't imagine the spot this family must have been in on the spot with all of their emotions completely overwhelming them. And they're supposed to make a life and death decision on the spot, especially now that we know the first ransoms came in on day two. Mm-hmm. Right. So after 24 to 48 hours, that's when the ones went to the local station. So now they're supposed to come up with $6 million. They're supposed to try to figure out why they're going to a news outlet and they're listening to what the FBI is saying. And I can tell you, the FBI, this is my opinion, they did not recommend giving any money without proof of life. That is just what mm-hmm. I think the recommendation was. On top of that, we've talked about this a little bit, but if you have $40 million or your net worth is that, that means if you sell your stuff, you sell your stocks, you sell your investments, it does not mean you have $60 million underneath your mattress. You're not going to have it in bank accounts unless you have a lot of bank accounts. It's only FDIC insured for $250,000, I believe, most banks. So think money is, as we all know, it's when you have money, you're making it work. Mm-hmm. And so I think the time span was too short. Remember, they had only till the 5th and then the 9th. So that is not a lot of time. And again, you're making this huge decision and there's no proof of life. What I wish is that they would have thrown, like I'm suggesting right now, throw in half a Bitcoin, 37, tickle the wire. You and I know, and I've never talked about this to give the number, Robin, case funds is a huge number. I'm just going to leave it at that.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm also curious, you know, just going to the perpetrator of this, again, if the intent is the money, why did they use the most unconventional, never used methodology, which, again, goes against the profile of someone doing this, which is going through media and not a direct contact? What was the intent of that, do you think?
Oh, I think when they asked for money, at that point, again, I'm down to just being cruel. I mean, they knew that the FBI, this is my opinion, I think they knew they weren't going to get a dime. They knew exactly what I'm saying, just like everybody knows. If you don't have proof of life or proof of death, uh-huh. you know, the FBI is going to support that. And they are going to work with what the FBI is recommending, typically speaking. And they're an emotional wreck at that point. So you add that all together, Robin, I just think it was cruel. And I think it was those people wanting to be in control of the narrative and have everybody see them on center stage.
So now we are getting reports, TMZ, you know, they went too long without having a good story. So suddenly they're getting they're getting ransom notes again. How legit do you think these things are? You were just talking about that half a Bitcoin offer that seems to be out there. Let's talk about that and entertaining that. I mean, Bitcoin is somewhat traceable. I have no idea what sort of resources, you know, I would imagine the FBI has far greater resources than you or I have at trying to track something like that. Why don't they? I mean, at the very least, there's someone to go arrest. I mean, if you can trace it down. I mean, but there's got to be ways that they're expecting to collect this Bitcoin and not be traced. So I don't think it's just as easy as, well, send the money and see what happens or where it goes. It may go absolutely nowhere. And I don't know that you're ever going to truly find where it went. Or am I wrong on that? Is there a way that they could figure this out on the back end?
And even, and throw more on that. Sorry, Jen, we're going to inundate you. You know, and Savannah said they would. I don't understand, like, you, why? Because they actually make the ultimate call whether they're going to pay anything or not. Why not risk that? Because it seems, I mean, why wouldn't you?
This is a no-brainer for me. And, you know, we make calls on cases like this all the time with case funds. Yes, you had to get everybody to approve it. But we made a lot of calls like this, particularly in narcotic cases and organized crime cases. In other words, you have to be willing. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've been at a bank getting $1 million out. That's the FBI's money. And we're taking a risk that things are going to go smoothly with the surveillance on it. We're going to track it. And so this is not new to the FBI. The FBI is very good at this. And when it comes to Bitcoin, Tony, there are these chains that are easily followed. And it's public knowledge. The problem is Batman could be at the end of that chain. So now you have a ghost that took it out. But there are documented cases, and I actually am going to go on Twitter and post a documented case about how it can be done. So once they take it out, if they're going to make it liquid, it has to go through a traceable unit. It's from it becomes dead.
And that has even a higher probability than some of the cases I worked in the counterintelligence world. I mean, there was cases in New York many decades ago when I was first there where we actually were doing recruitment ops where we got approved, you know, you put diamonds and some non-traceable things under windshield wipers of intelligence officers with a note, you know, knowing the probability of that stuff walking was pretty high, but you're always willing to take that risk of the potential reward. So it's interesting here. Why aren't they willing? Why isn't someone willing to take a risk for a potential reward of just her body? Just bring her home. Like Savannah kept saying, I'm with you. I don't get why no one's doing more. There's certainly going to be more done. That's because there's a moron at top running this.
Just think, Robin, all of the money that is being spent on this case. We saw the set added up in Gabby Petito looking for Brian Laundrie. It was millions and millions and millions of dollars in assets. I can't remember the exact million-dollar figure, but it was multi-gazillion dollars. And they're not willing to spend a freaking half of a Bitcoin to tickle the wire here. I am stunned.
Me too. You know, it all comes down, you know, and sorry, you know, it's showing how the sausage is made. It all comes down to these pots of money, right? That's how the world thinks inside the bureaucracy. Well, we have all this overtime we can pay. And since agents don't get paid overtime, it doesn't really count. You just get paid one salary. So we can easily use salary here. But this has actually got to come out of discretionary funds when this is actually don't have as much discretionary funds. So we can't spend $10,000 here, but we can pay $100,000 in supposed overtime. It just makes no sense.
Guys, I think we're forgetting the most important thing here. Kash Patel has a girlfriend who is a singing sensation that he needs to go see. So, I mean, there's money that needs to go to fly him to whatever Indian casino that she may be performing at in the lounge on a Thursday after the buffet empties at 8:30 and you can get two for ones on the slots. That money needs to go there. I mean, what are we thinking? I mean, this is insane. Why would we want to spend this on an investigation into a kidnapping and a murder when you need to fly that around? I mean, come on, pots of America. Money.
That's the Gulfstream pot of money.
Yeah, America. Let's talk about another aspect of this case, and let's get your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now, and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Every deputy who cast a ballot on this against Nanos, because the board of supervisors said, hey, let's see what's going on here. Do y'all think he's a great guy or not? The board of supervisors just gave him 10 business days to answer under oath or face removal, because every deputy said, we don't like you. You're not qualified. We have no confidence in you, which is great when every person that works under you doesn't believe in you. An independent review confirmed he used his political office to go after political opponents, and he's still there, still running the most high-profile missing persons case in America. So what exactly is he holding on to? And what falls apart for him the moment he lets go? So let's drop off there. Jen, you've investigated leaders who've held on to power long past the point where everyone around them wanted them gone. When a sheriff is facing a 241-0 no-confidence vote from his own deputies, the board threatening removal, an independent review confirming political retaliation, and a $2 million federal lawsuit, what's the calculation that makes someone say, you know what, I'm going to stay in this job. This seems lovely. I'm going to dig in even deeper. Why on earth would a sane person at some point not say, yeah, you know what, nobody believes in me. Maybe I'm best just to go to retirement at some point and just bow out. Is it ego? Is it pride? Is it ignorance? I mean, what the hell do you think is going on here behind the scenes with Nanos?
Behind the scenes, behind his head, this is what's going on. In other words, behind his face, in his brain.
Yeah.
I'm best for the job. I'm completely misunderstood. I've done everything right. I made one minor mistake that really wasn't my mistake. It was the six-month detective on the job releasing the crime scene. I'm the man, and most people believe that. I just have a group of haters that are in my political opponent arena, and so I'm not paying attention to any of this.
Yep. That's about right. That's exactly what's going on behind that face.
How do you reach somebody like that? Is there any reaching somebody like that? Is there any lever within Pima County where somebody steps in and says, come on? I mean, they've done it every public way possible now with the no vote of confidence. Every way you could shame somebody legally, they've done. Yet he's still there. And I get that's probably exactly right. What's going on behind those eyeballs? That's the equation. And that's the outcome that he is seeing in his brain. But is there a support system going on behind the scenes, you think, that helps confirm that helps continue that confirmation bias that he has already going on in his brain? Is there any reaching this guy for the greater good to convince him to think differently?
In a word, no. And secondarily, he has a lot of people that are supporting him.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what, because they're looking for those raises. They're looking for those mm-hmm. positions. Look at that 6 month. You know, so a homicide detective with 6 months detective, he's probably his biggest cheerleader. There's a lot of people that are behind the scenes supporting him, some because of an emotional attachment over years. I tell you, things like people's secretaries and people's admin people, if he's treated them right, they're going to be their biggest supporters, and other people who are in good graces that want him to survive all of this. So I don't think he's going anywhere unless he is literally somehow forced out.
Yeah, Jen's hitting it right on the head. You know, when you have people that are benefiting from you in that position, why would they oppose him? Because it just doesn't work that way. And Jen hit it right, too. The support staff, they are the ones running that office. They're the ones that have longevity. They don't move. They stay in place. They run the finance. They run the economics. They run the paper trails. They run all these things. And if he's treated them well over the years, they're the ones that actually have the undercurrent of the entire office and support it. So, yeah, I'm with Jen. So it's easy to have a lot of haters. But if the haters don't make an impact on those that are actually keeping things running, then there's not going to be a change.
I'm wondering, you know, if there's an element of running out the clock on this as well in his position. Like, if he were to step down right now, are there any legal repercussions to him? You know, could there be civil suits filed? I know he's protected pretty well for the position that he's in terms of any sort of lawsuits and all that, which, you know, it is our system works. Don't like it, but it is what it is. So he's fairly insulated there to a certain extent. But if I wonder if he's calculating this, too, of like, well, if I just, you know, if I retire here in a couple of years, whatever it is, I think it's like 28 or something when his term is up or he could be reelected, God forbid. I'm wondering if, you know, time will heal the wounds in his mind. And maybe when he steps away and does eventually retire, he's waiting for a greener pasture to step into than the one he may be stepping into if he were to do that right now. Again, completely, you know, completely based on his own self-interest, not in the interest of the community that he serves. But I'm wondering if that's part of the calculation and part of the inspiration to just keep his head down, ignore every piece of criticism, and only take in the people that are singing his praises.
Well, take a look at what just happened. I think it was yesterday, and forgive me if I butcher the name. I'm not a political person, but the California guy running Swalwell, running right for governor after the...
Oh, yeah.
Whatever
those accusations, yeah,
kisses and all these things.
Sure. Yeah, horrible shit. Yeah,
that look at that backlash now.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, I don't know who. Obviously, he wants to try to. I'm sure his poor family. They're just suffering with all these horrible accusations and things, especially if they're true. And he wants to step away. But imagine if Nanos right now just put up the white flag. Tony, he will never do that. And I wanted to ask, isn't it coming up the 120 days? Do we have that exact day marked on the calendar? The 120 days that they have to get the votes?
I don't think we're there yet, because I think they began this operation. I don't think we're 120 days into the year yet, are we?
I think we're less than 2 months away.
Yeah, we're getting close. It's not a lot of time, because you have to average like 1,000 some signatures a day, or it's something ridiculous. It's like very unattainable. I think it's more than 1,000, isn't it? Almost like it's some ridiculous number. Like we have the bars are set so high that they're almost unattainable. I feel like, I wonder if at the end of all this, if Pima County is going to reevaluate some of these things and go, maybe we should have easier levers to pull should we need to remove somebody, because the way they're currently set up makes it next to impossible. I mean, it would take quite a bit. And I'm not saying that this is going to happen or anything, but the only other thing that I could think that would maybe trigger more motivation to remove this man is if there were some sort of a sex scandal or something that come out. That seems to be the lever that pulls a lot of people out of these positions. You can like just defile the community and destroy investigations and be incompetent here and there in many people's opinions, and you're good to go till your term is up. But you get that mixed in, and it's like, whoa, that's a bridge too far. It seems it's funny where people will draw the line.
Yeah, I got the deadline. So it was filed on March 12th. They have deadline submit signed petitions by July 10th, and signatures required 122,211. 25% of the votes cast in his last sheriff's election is what they need.
Mm-hmm. So that would bring us to a vote if we were to get there. And they have to be verified signatures too, as well. It's not just, you can't just go around and like fill out a bunch of names and here, like they have to. So you need, I mean, truly, if you're, you know, doing the numbers or something, 200,000 really to achieve reputable, actual, verifiable 120,000 to get there. So that's a lot of signatures. Is there any chance in hell they're going to get there?
Maybe. So I'm sorry, Jen. So it's being led by Daniel Buterres, and they're aiming for 135,000 signatures. They seem to sound optimistic. Anyway, go ahead, Jen.
No, I'm sorry about that, Robin. And this is his opponent. Just to be clear, you know, this isn't just some citizen upset about the Guthrie case. This is the guy that wants to be sheriff.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I just want to make that crystal clear.
It's political behind it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm saying he's hugely motivated.
Yeah. And that's good. I mean, it's better than just, you know, Joe Blow walking around with a clipboard. There is something there to it. And I don't know. I wonder if we could get there. That would take us to a new election. And then we'll see if the villagers make the same bad choice twice or three times. It would be if he were to be reelected, I believe. Might even be more than that, because he was sheriff for quite some time prior to that. I don't know. It would be very interesting to see where that could possibly line up at the end of the day. Supervisor Hines said something also significant, that even if Nanos provides that response, which he still is required to do, that's the clock that's counting down. That, I believe, we're in like less than 6 or 7 days where he has to respond to the lack of confidence issues that they brought to the table. But the statute with that is response. It's not satisfactory response. It's not response that makes a modicum of sense. It's just response. He could, you know, respond with the lyrics to Mary Had a Little Lamb and it would be a response.
He's going to put together a great response, because again, it's not just him. It's him and his cadre of individuals who are assisting with that. And that's going to be their number one priority. This isn't going to be investigative, solving any crimes, helping with Nancy Guthrie. He's got a cadre of not only deputies, but also admin people that are working on these responses, because those questions were hugely comprehensive. Things like about discipline. Just imagine how many people this guy has disciplined. We know about a lot of them. Imagine all of that he's going to have to support and have the documentation why he did something. So this is taking a lot of work behind the scenes. I would tell you, most hours of most days leading up to this deadline.
So, Tony, here's what it's saying right now that I'm looking at. There's no confidence vote. Union vote announced March 24, 241 no confidence and resign, 65 abstain, 0 in favor. Nano's response, according to this, was March 25th, the very next day. His exact statement was, "You cannot attack my department, attack the sheriff, but you will not get by with attacking my department," whatever the hell that means. But apparently he did respond, according to this. So I don't think he's going to say anything else on it. My guess, and for the same reasons Jen's saying, you know, if he feels he has the support of enough people, which he does, at this point in his career, people know how to form a coalition around you to support your actions, decisions. And you're also going to have, he's very used to having opponents. I mean, we've seen this in all organizations where you have people on high, where they're very used to pissing people off. And they're very used to taking heat on things. And that's why he seems unflappable in all these things. That's why you see him going to basketball games and driving rich cars around, because it's always, I'm a science fiction fan, as everyone knows. And the new Battlestar Galactica, they always say, all this has happened before and all this will happen again. And I think that's his mantra.
And you just read the number there, 69 people abstained. So he's at least got 69 supporters, and that's a lot of manpower.
Is that supporters, though, Jen, or is that people who just don't want to be on the record to be on the chopping block when he decides to cut the next heads off the monster? You know,
well, it could be a combination of both. To me, I believe that it's somebody that believes they have something to gain by him being in power. Some of those, and the other one, right? They get, and Tony, you're the one that just spelled it out. How impossible it's going to be to get those signatures. So that's not going to work. You also spelled it out that all that he has to do is answer.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to do anything further. So we've answered our own questions. He's there until 2028.
I'm here to bring no hope.
There is
Happy Monday, everyone.
No hope. But, so here's the positive side, as we've said before, people in that department that are trying to do righteous work, that they see him as getting in the way, they've already figured out how to get around him. They've already figured out how to work with his nutter craziness, and they're still going to do the important work anyway. Where it hurts, and that we saw in this case, which was really shocking to me, is how he removes people with experience that threaten his kingdom from those good posts, from those important posts, you know, like investigating big cases like this, and put someone with no experience on it. And I always, like Jen, I always be very careful. I'm not degrading or demonizing in any way the investigator who's actually running this case. Mm-hmm. Very, very good and righteous people doing this, but they just don't have the reps yet to have the experience to mitigate all the pitfalls along the way. That's why you do have experienced people with this running these things, because they are very, very important for multiple things, not just investigatively, but optics wise, you know, because you always have to have the support of the public. You have to have the support of everyone on these things, because that's where leads come from. So all those elements are important. Anyway.
Why do you think he put somebody on this case as the lead investigator that didn't have experience? At the end of the day, it's going to reflect negatively on him. Did he just not see that? Was he just completely blind? Or is it part of a hero type complex where I'm going to put somebody shitty as the lead, so when they screw up, in his mind, maybe he thought he could swoop in and save the day, even though that has not clearly happened at all?
I think it was twofold. I think one of the reasons, and the number one reason, was loyalty of that person. He wanted a yes man in there that was going to do as he was told. That's really the number one reason. And I think secondarily, he had no idea that this information would get out.
100%.
Your thoughts in the comment section and Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in on where things are currently standing in this nightmare that is the Nancy Guthrie investigation.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.